Arm's Length Reporting for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. KER, no longer politics, going to be more finance than anything else. I've got Stephen Leeb on the line with me right now. Stephen is involved with an organization called Leeb Capital, located back in New York City. Office, anyway, is back in Manhattan. But as long as this COVID thing is going on, Stephen is very definitely working out of his house, as I am. Stephen, I got a question for you. Tell me about Leeb Capital. How did you get involved in it?
Just something that I wanted to do. I mean, basically, I have to keep them very separate, but I have always been a newsletter writer and a researcher and kind of dedicated to getting my ideas out there and around because I thought that they could possibly help people. And it just was kind of a natural transition to go from writing financial letters to managing money. And I made the transition. And, you know, I've been managing money basically for about the last, you know, since 1990.
Okay. Well, it sounds to me like you're about as crazy as I am. The only reason I'm doing radio is because I really enjoy doing it. I really enjoyed discussing financial issues. Tell me a little bit about your, you said newsletters, plural. Steve, tell me about your newsletters.
Well, I have, you know, currently I'm the editor of two. One is called The Complete Investor, which as its title suggests, it tries to present various portfolios for various different types of individuals. And its chief portfolio is the big cap growth.
Okay.
And then we also have an income portfolio, and we also have a couple of mutual fund portfolios and an aggressive portfolio, you know, for smaller cap stocks that are fairly aggressive. You know, our main portfolio is big cap growth.
So basically your other portfolio, which deals primarily with return more than anything else, I would have to believe, Stephen, that your main audience is probably people like myself. Tell me a little bit about the investment portfolio that deals with return, specifically return in terms of interest.
In terms of income, basically there we search out stocks that have underlying value. It doesn't do you any good to just buy high income stocks if that income is not going to grow. So we're more interested in a combination of growth and income and total return. You, as you said, Al, and basically. We will, you know, try and cover the gamut. I mean, we'll try and diversify within that portfolio. I mean, we'll basically have MLPs as well as technology stocks if the technology stocks pay, a decent dividend, decent yield. It's a diversified portfolio that I would say has an average yield of about 3.5-4%, somewhere around there. But
and
also
are you fairly comfortable with that, Stephen, 3.5 to 4?
I would be comfortable even in this market with a little bit less, but okay. I think that those yields are going to have to go up over time, and that's why you want really good companies that will be able to raise their dividends over time. One of our top companies in that portfolio is no longer yielding, it's yielding, I think, less than about 2%, and it's Taiwan Semiconductor. And the reason it's only yielding about 2% is because the stock has gone crazy on the upside. We've had to cut back because, 2% is not such a big enough yield, but the growth there, I think, is going to remain for the next, foreseeable future. They're the only game in town when it comes to semiconductor manufacturing. So we will look for a combination of growth and income. You won't find a stock in our growth income portfolio that doesn't have at least some yield. I think the lowest is, again, probably TSM around 2, maybe a little bit over 2% after today's fall in the market. But, that's what we're at. We're trying to, basically produce a very strong total return for investors with income, with dividends being at least a significant portion of that total return.
Sure. Steve, let me ask you a question now. Our economy in the United States right now, you could describe it either way, particularly after a day like today. There's really nothing in terms of guaranteed growth right now, and I think that's a result of our society more than anything else. The level of anxiety and the level of depression in our society right now has increased dramatically, according to my medical guests on the show. That's pretty high. Anxiety and depression have to make huge differences, Steve, I would have to think, in your work. I'm not saying that you're anxious or depressed, but I'm saying keeping people don't ever get old, Stephen. Keeping people satisfied in this society is a real challenge, and your challenge is probably close to second to none.
It's very tough, and everything you say, I could not agree more. I mean, I just have seen this country, I hate to use the word deteriorate, but I can't, no other word comes to mind.
Right.
I mean, it used to be a country that, you know, everybody participated. I mean, you know, back in the, when I was, you know, much younger, I mean, you know, everybody benefited from what everyone else did. I mean, today, I mean, the biggest industry in our country is probably finance in some way or other. And, you know, the financial industry is not an industry that benefits from what they do for their customers. They benefit from what they try and do for themselves.
Right.
How many financial advisors tell you to have like 10% of your money in gold or commodities, when that's been the best? Gold has been the best performing asset over the past, you know, 20 years.
Right.
And they don't do it. The financial industry was responsible for basically breaking up AT&T and destroying Bell Labs. There's no other word for it. They destroyed the best research resource that we had in this country because they got a big payday for, you know, breaking up a company. I'm not saying that they're bad people, but what happened, Al, is that we became spoiled by having too much money. And that money, unfortunately, has basically just filtered up to the particular sector of the economy. The other sectors of the economy, by and large, have been left wanting. And that's no good. That just is not good. And you're seeing that it's accelerating.
Let me tell you what I think part of the problem is, and we've only got about less than a minute here, and then I'm going to have to take a break. I am going to devote the entire second hour to your philosophy on investing. I would maintain, and we've got about a minute left here, I'd like you to think about this, Stephen. I think part of the problem in the investment community right now, whether you're talking paper, whether you're talking within the paper sector, stocks and bonds, what have you, I think part of the problem has been, number one, of course, the problems that we had in 2008, et cetera, et cetera. But I firmly believe, and this was my exact mantra when I switched the subject of the radio program over to investing, from simply interviewing managers, not managers, but executives of publicly traded companies, an awful lot of easy money came into being, easy money to investors because of the real estate market. It was absolutely crazy, in my opinion, some of the rates of appreciation that we saw then. And I would maintain the same thing is going on right now, and I would maintain that is hurting the investment community in the paper market. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to be back right now with Stephen Leeb. Stick around.
your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in to the KE Report. Going to concentrate exclusively on the mineral markets this time. I'm talking with Stephen Lieb. Stephen has been in the market as an independent money manager for over 20 years, and he has always outperformed the market. Got a very interesting comment from Jim. He says, 5 weeks in, faith in the Biden regime is dropping fast with independents by 18%. Faith in the economy is declining, and that probably has something to do with the gold market. We're going to talk about a couple of other issues that could be infecting, there's a good word, the gold market. One is the fact that the United States, it looks like it's going to have to inflate its way out of debt. Jobs are not what they should be, given the fact that we're going on our way slowly back to pre-COVID conditions. We should be getting more employment here, but in fact, we're not. U.S. jobs are flat. And this commenter feels we're never going to open U.S. manufacturing again. Any comment on that? He feels that that has quite a bit to do, Stephen, with what's going on in the gold market today. Also mentions the U.S. debt, which has always been a real fear for me. We're approaching $3 trillion right now. Steve, what are your comments on this?
Well, I mean, you know, as far as the Biden administration, you know, this is, it's not possible to blame everything that's happening in the U.S. just on Biden. It's been, you know, 40, 50 years happening. And I, you know, believe that the world's economy right now is recovering. And I think the U.S. economy will probably recover. And I think that the commodity uptrend that we've seen, well, is correcting. I mean, we've had a historic run in commodities. Industrial commodities have run up 40% in less than a year. I can't remember. I mean, I don't think there was any time other than perhaps the 70s where you saw that kind of action. Oil, despite everything else, is up strongly. It's up more than 100% from its high. And I think that gold is a gift that just keeps on giving, in the sense that I think the lower it goes, the higher it's going to end up. And I think it's going to end up much, much higher. Al, I expect that the world is going to change dramatically as the Bank of International Settlements introduces new rules come June 1st. And basically, what people want to see, let me just say, last night, when I was watching these markets, I mean, very late last night, I saw copper fall 5% in, I think, 3 minutes or so. That's not the way you want markets to behave. There's going to be a move toward physical markets, not you know, these markets where you can trade with just 5% margin. And once that happens, and BIS, the Bank of International Settlements, has already have rules in place. If that's going to happen sometime in June. And if they go forward with those rules, and I think they will, they may institute them gradually, you're going to see an entirely different marketplace. And I think you are going to see a swing to the east. I mean, the U.S. has lost a lot of its mojo, and I don't think, unfortunately and tragically, we're going to get it back anytime soon. But I think the world's economy will be okay, and I think the U.S. economy will be okay. I think we will have more inflation. And I don't think the stock market will be a particularly good place to be, but I think gold and commodities, I think you've just seen, you know, any one of the current rally. So I wouldn't be too distressed here. And as far as gold, I would use this as a buying opportunity. I see very limited downside risk here.
Stephen, let's talk about the whole aspect of the gold market. Let's talk about the stocks that are part of the gold market, the gold explorers, the gold producers, the gold developers. Is that a good place to be right now?
Well, if you look at today, Franco-Nevada's up despite the downtick in gold. Newmont's up despite the downtick in gold. One of my favorite explorers, well, that's not really an explorer, but it's certainly a junior that will start producing. They've got a massive property. Newmont Gold is not Nova Gold. They're down, I don't know, less than about 1.5%. I don't see any particular weakness in the gold shares today. In fact, the GDX is actually up a little bit. The juniors are down just a tiny bit. So, you know, they're basically acting as a shelter in a storm, though gold is down. But gold is, I don't see it going down much more, Al. I really don't. And I think, you know, gold is really it's a great place to be. Look, over the past first 20 years of this century, gold outperformed the S&P 500 by 200 percentage points. I see absolutely nothing to change that. In fact, I think the next part of this century, you'll also see that kind of favoritism toward gold. I think gold will outperform probably every other asset longer term. So I view it again, just coming, if they're coming down, I mean, these stocks like Franco Nevada, Newmont, Barrick, whichever one, Nova Gold, I mean, with the explorers and the juniors, you have to do a little bit more research, but I certainly feel comfortable with that one. I would use this as a buying opportunity. Yeah, it can be another 5 or 10%, but that's it. You're looking at 5 or 10% versus, you know, many hundreds of percent on the upside. So it's sort of like a day to be thankful for in a way. I mean, it gives you a chance to buy something that's cheaper and more undervalued than it was the day before.
You know, when I look at the gold market, let me put it this way, Stephen. When I was involved in the gold market, and I was involved in it for an awful long time, I did most of my investing in speculative investments, explorers, juniors, et cetera, et cetera. You have to really know the management well if you're going to do that. But I don't view right now as being necessarily a bad time. And the reason I say that is because I firmly believe that when you have turbulence in the political arena, you're going to have increases appreciation in the junior resource sector. How about you, Bud?
Yeah, I totally believe that. And if you look at, you know, the action in gold relative to this relative to turbulence favors gold, and it certainly favors, you know, the right junior gold company is always going to be the best stock to buy. And you're absolutely right, Al. You have to know the management. So when I mention a stock like Nova Gold, I do know that management. And I know that they're honest. I know that they're straight shooters. I know they have the permits, and I know that they have the assets in the ground. And I'm very, very confident of that. So, you know, that would be, you know, certainly an example of a stock that I would be very thankful to buy now. In fact, I may buy some more of it, actually. I agree with you 100%. Yes, I think turbulence is gold's friend.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Arm's Length Reporting. For investors who want the whole story, this is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome into KER Politics. Going to spend part of the first half with my friend Spoonful of Courage, Dr. Chuck, and we're going to talk a little bit about, not the book, but we're going to throw him a question that I had thrown at me this morning that is very, very interesting. The question has to do with acceptance. A lot of people, including myself, harbor some ill feelings towards some of the things that the Democrats are doing right now. And my friend, who is also a retired physician, said, you know, Al, he said, I simply can't deal with this because I'm viewing as what's going on as the end of the Republican Party. And I said, don't even say that. I said, you know, this too shall pass. Just accept it. Give it over to God, let him handle it, and wait and see where we're at, say, at the end of August, the early part of September. by that time, the liberals will have been given enough rope to either succeed or to hang themselves. And regardless, there's nothing at this moment in time that we can do. Doc, I'd like to ask you a question. And my question, Dr. Page, is how would you have answered that question?
Wow.
Oh, come on.
That's one of those life, universe, and everything kind of questions. You know, I do not think that it is the end. I think, you know, we talked on the last show about we have to respond with the end in mind, and we can't think short term. And I think that's what a lot of people, whoever stormed the Capitol, whether it was, we hear all these conspiracy theories and stuff, and as I've noticed now, it's called an insurrection. But, you know, whoever did this, you know, right-wing extremists, whatever, it was not a good idea. We know that's not the way. That's not the way to fight a battle. But I do not think it's the end. I mean, I think it's just the beginning. I do think there's always hope. You know, I do believe that conservative values are the right path for people. I think for people who, you know, there's different levels of thinking, Al. There's people who wear the victim glasses, you know. Everything is always, you know, the consequences or the outcome of their life is always dependent upon the consequences. You know, you change the circumstances and then you expect a different outcome. And that's what we're seeing here with so many people. You know, C equals O. The second level are people who, you know, they begin to think that, you know, their response makes a big difference. But I think on a bigger level, you know, there's you know, more than wearing the victim glasses, more than wearing the, you know, the hero glasses that we're going to, you know, fix this, I think looking at things through a bigger perspective, realizing that, you know, I'm still a strong believer that God is in control of this. You know,
I am too, Chuck. Sorry.
And, you know, and just looking back, you know, and thinking about there's a book in the Bible, Book of Esther.
Yep.
You know, your Jews who are listening may be familiar with that book. You know, God is never mentioned, and there was a lot of things that were happening politically that it seemed like that a whole race of people were going to be, were going to be killed, and yet in that process, at the darkest moment, somebody stepped up and made a difference, and that was Esther. You know,
yep.
God is never even mentioned in the whole book. It's interesting. But yet we know behind the scenes that somehow God is working out things toward his outcome. And I think all of us need to just to realize that we can all make a difference. You know, we always think about what's happening on a big picture politically, but I think we need to take a step back and look at things more locally and more our sphere of influence and how we can influence people. And I'll tell you, you know, I'm a physician. I have people that come out of my office that have very different beliefs than I do.
Sure.
But, you know, yet I can always find some kind of common bond with that person. I always find a way to connect and unite with that person. You know, I really feel like, you know, so often we're so focused on what's happening up in Washington, D.C., we forget about what's happening in our own neighborhood, and we can make a difference with people. I still believe that, you know, we can begin to have conversations with people. It's about relationships. And I think that we can make a difference.
You know, I think you're 100% right, Dr. Chuck. I agree 100% on that. I just find it to be very, very interesting right now. I quoted from a little scripture also this morning when I was talking to my friend. But I want to tell you, by the way, who is going to be on the show tomorrow, by the way. But regardless of that, what I want to say is that I believe God is in control, you know, and my stance on the situation right now is I'm going to give the liberals as much rope as they need to either prove themselves to be correct or to hang themselves. And you know what? Once I made that decision and simply said, Jesus, take over, take this out of my mind, please. It's in your hands. You know what happened? I wasn't angry anymore.
Yeah, and I don't think, and here's the thing, you know, the scriptures talk about being, it's a very wise statement, being quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. And, you know, we're just seeing just the reverse in our culture. Everybody's mad, everybody's talking, and nobody's listening.
Right.
And I think if we just kept that kind of proverb in the back of our mind, quick to hear, just to listen to people, you know, and I think so often, even people who don't believe the way that we do, if we just stop and listen, at least if anything, and just hear people out, you know, and hear what they're feeling, even if they're way out in left field, just listen, hear what they're saying, and then be slow to speak and be careful with the words that we say.
Yep.
You know, and I mean, isn't this whole situation just a great example of what happens when you say things and you don't really think about it? I mean, you know, once again, Donald Trump is a good example of that.
Yeah, he is.
Said things that have inflamed people. On the other hand, Biden has not made it any better. I mean, you know, once again, he said he was going to bring people together, and the first thing he's doing is saying inflammatory statements. And so
right.
I just think on a personal level, I mean, regardless of your politics, let's just remember, you know, quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to get angry. And I think, you know, I really think there's hope. I really do. I mean, I don't expect people to believe exactly the way that I believe. Everybody's entitled to their own opinion. But I think we have to get to the point where we're going to stop and we're going to listen to people and we're going to value them as people, irregardless of their ideological, you know, beliefs and presuppositions, that we just need to just value them as people and stop and listen. I think if we'll do that, we'll build a lot more bridges. And I think in the long run, that's the kind of society and the kind of culture that we want to live in. That's the thing about the United States, is that everybody can voice their opinions, you know, and we want to have that kind of society, you know, where even if somebody is, they're crazy, at least they can voice their opinion. They're not entitled to their own truth, but they are entitled to their own opinion. And that's the kind of society that we want to be able to create, so that we can have conversations with people about things. But right now, everybody's so angry and everybody's so emotionally charged that we're undermining the whole, our whole society.
You know, Dr. Spoonful of Courage, I want to tell you, I agree with you 1,000% on that one. Not Dr. Spoonful of Courage, obviously, Dr. Charles Page. Got a few copies of that book left, by the way. If anybody wants a copy, simply get in touch with me. I'll get in touch with Chuck, and we'll get you a copy of the book. This man is a genius. Listen to what he has to say. Totally different.
You know, surgeon, sometimes wrong, but never in doubt.
There you go. Okay, stick around, you guys. Got to take a commercial break. Be right back. Okay, back to wrap up KER Politics here with my main contributor, Jim McKinney. Jim, as you all know, was the chairman of the re-elect Trump committee. He understands probably as well as anyone the huge political challenges that are ahead of us right now. Mr. Mystery Man from Semiemu, what questions do you have at this point for Jim?
Yeah, I'm gonna pass on that just for the moment, Al, because I'm looking through my questions, and I thought we were just about at the end of the program.
No. Think about something else. I've got a lot of things I want to talk with Jimmy about. Jimmy, I think
let me finish up with what we in the last segment we were talking about what we can do.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you, Jimmy. Go ahead.
Yeah. So the first thing is, a lot of conservatives right now are feeling isolated, they're feeling intimidated, and that's exactly what the left is trying to do to us. They're trying to scare people into away from the Trump agenda, they're trying to identify the person as a problem. That's going to not last very long, because the moment that President Trump is out of office, what is the media going to do to continue to harp on him as the evil bad guy? They're going to try it, and then they're turning, and what they're doing now is turning to specific individuals. We have to stand up and be strong and not allow that to happen. We have to ensure that people are not intimidated and not afraid to be positive about America, to believe in this country, to believe that free speech is the most essential element of our nation's existence. And the one place that started this for the entire world was right here. And we want to protect that. So, you know, we can't be intimidated. We can't be afraid. We've got to be able to say, okay, and not get angry and split. That's exactly what they're attempting to do. And that's what they did with many legislators, House members and senators, just after the January 6th events. And it turns out that maybe that's not exactly the narrative that was out there was not actually factual. There's a lot of people being arrested that were on the left that instigated some of the violence, and the timing of when Trump spoke versus when things started happening is completely different. So, you know, there's some facts that need to be expressed, and people have to not be afraid to stand up and say, you know what, America's a good place.
You know what, I have to say, that's what I've been thinking, Jimmy. And as all our listeners know, my official stance is to not even have an opinion on you. I mean, have an opinion, that's great, but wait until at least the end of August and see how the liberals fare in that particular time. More importantly, see how our country fares. And I think the best way to do that, as I was talking about in an earlier segment with Dr. Chuck Page, is let the anger go. Be middle of the road. Look at things in an unbiased manner. I have to say, as listeners are very aware, it's very, very difficult for me to do that because of my feelings toward the liberals. There are absolutely way too many unknowns out there, but the only way that this thing can be settled is by concrete action. Let's see what occurs between now and early September. Al, do you want to jump in?
Well, yeah, I agree with your statement. I was going to ask Jim about fundraising, because I thought with the end of the election and the Georgia runoffs that my mail with requests for money would calm down, but it seems like it's accelerated. And you know, quite honestly, I'm ticked off at the Republican Party. I don't think they handled this whole thing very well. I will say that I contributed modest amounts to a number of House candidates, women and African Americans, and virtually all of them won. And it just seems to me that that is where we have to put our money going forward to try to flip the House and get the Senate back. So anyhow, your thoughts, Jim?
No, I agree. I think that's a very important strategy and thought that a lot of it's hard to lead. It's easy to criticize. And what you've seen over the last 4 years is continual contempt for this president, identifying him as a evil guy. And it was easy to do that. Now, when they have to lead, they have to make decisions. And those decisions they've been making, most of us understand, are not in the best interest of the American people. So the House will be essential to take back. And I believe there's a very strong case. And of course, what we saw with the number of Republican victories in the House this cycle means that there's a great opportunity. And if they continue to push a far-left progressive agenda and they continue to try to silence people, that's going to do blowback on them. And I really strongly believe that supporting those candidates, that viable candidates, ones that speak well, that look good, that have policies that are consistent with conservative values, that are still supporting the basic idea that America is the most important place in this on this planet to promote democracy and good values, those are the type of people we want to support. And we've got to be careful about it, and we've got to focus our efforts. The other point is we cannot allow the Democrats to own the dense urban environments without putting pressure on them in those areas. And that's why we're losing. When you look at the map of the United States, the electoral map, there's just a handful of major urban areas that dictated this. And of course, the fraud is, you know, legitimately, you have to question it. You've got to look at it. But you can't sit back and just say, we're going to cede Seattle, we're going to cede New York, we're going to cede, you know, just give that to the opposing voices. We've got to do something different there. And that's reaching out, I believe, to the minority communities, exactly what Trump was doing. He did well with Hispanics. He did really well with blacks. And that we've got a campaign to continue to go forward on and change that dynamic in the urban environments.
Well, Jimmy, what you're saying is something that I really want you to elaborate on, but that is more of the same. Now, it's really hard to say, it's impossible to say at this point if the Republicans really lost the election. I mean, the opinion out there is there was enough vote rigging, for lack of better terms, going on that Trump actually won, not the various Republicans. But I want to say, when you look at what happened in Georgia, when you look at Pennsylvania, when you look at some of the other states, Arizona, Nevada, I think we have to change the minds of the powers that be in those states so audits are actually available. Any comments, Jimmy?
Let's look at what happened there.
Yeah.
So the Democrats very effectively used COVID to change laws to allow people to do mail-in balloting with extended balloting periods, and they did not review signatures and did not allow people to observe. There were so many corrupt activities that went along there, and those were actually Republican state legislators that were afraid with the accusations of COVID. The fear caused them to allow these rule changes. They've got to crack down and realize that exactly what happened, that this was a game that they lost. And what bothers me more than anything else when I see Liz Cheney and some of the other Republicans that have voted for impeachment is they do not understand a level of effort that went into intimidating people and changing these election outcomes through crazy, you know, these crazy rules that were allowed to go through for COVID. And that is something that we've got to stop. And hopefully Republicans will wake up and realize that exactly what the enemy is doing here. When I say the enemy, it's the people, the enemy of American policy, American of freedom, of individual choice and speech.
Yeah.
In order to gain power, we've got to stand up to that. And it bothers me that people don't understand the bigger fight here.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, we've got less than a minute left here, you guys. The one comment that I want to make is that the liberals ran a very, very effective campaign. I'm not happy
well,
with
the results. Well, you know, remember what
Jimmy,
Joe Biden...
Jimmy, I'm not happy
just
with
real quick,
the
let
results.
Me say,
yeah, go ahead.
No, just let me say the one thing. Remember what Joe Biden said. We have the most organized and effective campaign fraud system. I can't remember the exact quote. Out there. And I think he was a Freudian slip telling the truth when he said that.
Well, that's very possible. You guys, we're just out of time for me to close this up. We got about 15 seconds left. Would like all the comments that we could get regarding what Jimmy and I and our friend are talking about right now. Let's flood the blog with ideas of what we can do. Hope you enjoyed KER Politics. I certainly enjoyed putting it together.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.